What's up, Jimmy Rhodes?
Hey, Jimmy. It's good to see you.
Thank you, Jimmy Rhodes. I am honored to be interviewed by you.
Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, Jimmy.
I know, man. I feel so good.
Hey, Jimmy, why don't you play him a song?
Jimmy Rhodes! Let's go!
Welcome to the Jimmy Rhodes Show. Today, I am continuing my series of interviews exploring the Mountain Masochist, which, having started 42 years ago, is one of the longest-running ultramarathons in the nation, and second in Virginia only to the Old Dominion 100. Though there have been some course changes over the years, the second half of the course more or less is the same as it was in that first running in 1983, and still finishes at the iconic Montebello Country Store. The last episode, we spoke with Tom Green about the first running of the race in 1983, and I was thinking about who to bring on for another conversation about the masochist, and I wanted to get someone with a long history of running the race, but who's still out there running it today. And that's today's guest, Alisa Springman. Many of you listening have met Alisa over the years as she's run close to 200 ultramarathons, just under that, I'm sure, with all your fat asses and everything like that, which is a type of race, for those of you who don't know, with a large portion of those races being just classic local events in like the Virginia and Mid-Atlantic area. She's also been a race director, a board member of the infamous Virginia Happy Trails Running Club, and besides having a pretty incredible ultra signup resume, has the most epic of ultra runner brags, being the cover shot of the May 2006 edition of Ultra Running Magazine. How about that? Per my count, Alisa has the most finishes of any woman at the Mountain Masochist, having finished 19 in a row since 2005, and is going for the big number 20 this November. Alisa is someone I've gotten to know like we get to know many of our ultra running friends, which is while chatting at races. And I'm excited to speak with her more in depth today. So, Alisa, welcome to the Jimmy Rhodes Show. Welcome to the program. Thanks for your time today.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. You did a really deep dive there. I'm impressed.
Yeah.
I thought some of that was pre-internet. But I guess not.
Yeah, you know, just a little bit of searching. You know, when Michelle and I owned the running store, there was a time when Emily Harrison was on the cover of Ultra Running Magazine. And,
oh, yeah.
And her grandma called the shop from Front Royal. And she was like, I'm calling all the vendors in Virginia that carry that magazine and seeing if you have any copies so I can order them. So did you have a proud parent or grandmother trying to get copies of Ultra Running Magazine?
Oh my, yes. I think at that point you could actually go buy it at maybe Borders. So
wow.
Yeah, there are a few yellowed copies sitting around in a box in my parents' apartment somewhere, I'm sure.
That's awesome.
But well, Emily Harrison was actually small world. She was a student of my husband's, and now she's stud ultra runner. So.
Yeah, that's right. Because she's like Front Royal in that area.
Yeah.
So
yeah. So Jim taught her middle school Spanish, and then she coached him when he attempted Western States, when he finished Western States.
That's amazing. That's cool.
Yeah, cool kind of circle there.
No, I love it. Yeah. Okay, so tell me first, how are you feeling as you prepare for your 20th Mountain Masochist 50 miler coming up in just a little bit over a month?
Well, now that it's out there, definitely feeling more pressure than usual. As an athlete, I've always put a lot of pressure on myself, but I keep that mostly internalized. But now some other people know. So it feels like, you know, I need to perform, but I'm doing my homework. Feel about the same, I think, as I usually do as I get ready, and really excited. Like, I love the race. It's the most awesome time of the year. It's the most awesome course.
Yeah.
It's the best people, the best support. Like, there's no better way to spend the day. So always get excited. Jim and I make a weekend of it. We've discovered staying there at the campsite in one of the cabins is really the way to go.
Yeah,
So
we've actually done that the past 2 years, and we now just re-up it right after the next the
exactly.
race. And it's the way to do it for
It
sure.
is the way to go. And Jim was so good because he has been my crew and my driver for the past few years. We've run it together. He's run it himself. But now he's really kind of been such a great support. And he knew this year when I was running my 19th, he wanted to go back and reserve that cabin while I was on the course, but he waited. He was like, I have to wait till you're finished to
Yeah,
reserve it. So got all the good mojo, all
I love it.
the superstitions working.
Yeah, and it's funny, you're such a pro, and of course, like, you got this, but then you put arbitrary stuff like, ooh, number 20, and all of a sudden there is this pressure. You can't really escape, from being there, just like, gosh, this is, in a lot of ways, it is a big deal. And then at the same time, like, it's just another race. It's just
It's just
another
another
day. So,
race. Yeah. It only has as much importance as you assign it. And to me, it's like part of the rhythm of the fall now. I mean, 20 years, like, what have I done for 20 years? There aren't many things that have been a part of my life for 20 years. So it's just part of the rhythm. And, it's just a chance. I think every time you go out there, Mount Masochus is not like a gimme race. I don't think. I mean, if you have a certain amount of experience, you get to the point where there are races where you could kind of walk it in if you really had to. And this is not one of those races. So I think every year it is a stout challenge, no matter where you are in your running career. And I like that. Like it asks a little bit more of you than maybe the local 50K would. I don't know.
I remember hearing that in my first few years of the race, and there was not also a 100K going on as well, but still, like, just the cutoff was, significant for that. And you're right, it was very much not a gimme for a lot of people, whereas, some races you can really just take your time and power
You
hike it in, so.
generous cutoffs, that sort of thing. But when we were first running it, it was this very strict 12-hour cutoff, no matter what, and there weren't generous cutoffs along the way. In fact, it was the first race I ever DNF'd. So that kind of made it stick.
That's right, you did have one that was a DNF in there. What kind of kid were you? I asked this, like, I always feel like there's some formative things that maybe as like a young girl that you look back on, because we're all still kids, that is anything you can think of that's like associated with what you've done with ultra running, and kind of like, here you are doing something like this, 20 years in a row, which says a lot about keeping up commitment and fitness and just like training volume. So.
Well, I grew up as a swimmer, and I swam competitively through college. And swimming was a sport where you would, train, at the collegiate level, like 20, 25 hours a week for a race that lasted, a minute, 2 minutes. So, you really learned there's this huge time investment to see improvement, and improvement was measured in, a quarter of a second, half of a second. That was improvement. And it also taught me a lot mentally about, staying in it. When you're training and you're swimming in the pool, you're just staring down at the bottom. There's no feedback. There's no interaction with other people. So you really learn how to be in your own head and how to manage your effort and kind of keep at it when there aren't all these external things pushing you forward. A lot like you're playing on a field and you can hear the crowd. You're just in your own mind. And I think those are the things that really help with ultra running. And there was always a curiosity about, what can I do? And that's where ultra running started. It's just running to stay fit when I was done swimming, and then meeting an ultra runner, talking about that, and then just wondering, could I do that? Maybe. So that was a large part of my life as a child. I've always been a perfectionist. Probably that's a good and a bad thing.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit obsessive. But some of my favorite memories, I think, with my family when I was young, were going to state parks and hiking. So ultra running kind of combines my obsessiveness, my ability to be in my own mind, and then being outside enjoying the natural world.
Yeah, that's great. I think so many of us, I don't know, we were talking about this with some friends the other day, but we still really all feel like kids, right? All the psychology comes down to a lot of stuff with your childhood, and then a lot of us have very similar, I think, thoughts about, that and yeah, this love of nature combined with some other thing, obsession, and the swimming is a really interesting analogy there. Well, that kind of leads me to my next question too, is so per Ultra Sign Up, your first ultra marathon was the JFK 50 miler
As it should be.
in 2003. So how did you get there, and like what was your experience at that race? And that's another race that has like all this history. I mean, that's the oldest ultra in the US. 1963 is when that started. So how did you get to JFK 50 miler?
Well, when I was done with my swimming career, kind of post college, I still exercised every day and I kind of fell into running. It was cheap, easy to do.
Yeah.
I'm not super coordinated, so that was like accessible. And I was running half marathons. I would fly to Indiana and run a half marathon with my mom every year, the Indy Mini, kind of fun tradition that we had for a few years. And then I took a job in Pennsylvania. When I took that job, I was trying to get figure out what I was going to do, who I was going to work with, and people started talking about this woman, Sue Malone. And they're all like, "She is crazy. She runs like 100 miles, and I mean all at once in the mountains." And it turned out that I was going to teach chemistry. She ended up being my mentor, and she did this thing called birthday laps. And I went to join her, and we ran 40 some miles on the track that year together.
Wow.
And I just picked her brain about what it was like to run an ultra,
Yeah.
and I think that's where the curiosity began for sure. And I asked her at that point, that was April, and I was like, "Well, do you think I could run an ultra?" And she was like, "Well, sure. So would you coach me?" And she did. She said, "You could probably do JFK. That's in November." So I went from half marathons to JFK about 6 months.
Love it.
And it was great. I was in a very different place. I was married to someone else. I think it wasn't the happiest marriage. So maybe I was looking for an
Yeah.
outlet. And that was a really good one. It fit.
And then having to work with this person, like, what if you never met her, right? Like that sounds like a pretty
Oh,
profound meeting.
yes. And, she was just here this week. Like, we're still the best of friends. She's still doing amazing things in her late 60s. I mean,
Yeah.
she's such an inspiration. I'm so lucky. She and I put together our Holy Cowan's Gap 50K together. Such a labor of love. Such an amazing woman. And I think that's really one of the biggest gifts of this sport, meeting all these amazing people. Like
Yeah.
all these inspiring women, all these amazing people like you, look at what you're giving back here. I mean, I can't imagine a better community to be a part of.
Did you and her start the Holy Cowan's Gap 50K?
We did.
Yeah,
We
okay, cool.
knew there was
I
this
didn't know that.
series of trails and they weren't really well maintained, but we were super curious. Like,
Yeah.
love a good map. So we would study these maps and go out on these trails that were essentially bushwhacking at the time. They were marked just
Yeah.
very briefly, and managed to put together a 50K course and offered it up through the VHTRC. I
I love
mean,
it. You know,
yeah.
I love that. Like starting a race, because it is this like personal thing that you say, hey, I love this little area and I really want to like share it with other people. And on paper, it's like it's going to be a ton of work. It's going to, there's no way you're making money on this. It's going to be a huge pain in the neck. But you want to do it for just community. And I don't know. It's obviously
Yeah,
rewarding, and it's still going on. So.
just to share your like little corner of the world. Like,
Yeah.
aren't these trails great? I can't believe other people aren't using them. So
Yeah.
how can I get other people out here?
So JFK, just really quick, how did that go for
Yeah.
you? You finished.
It went really well. I was overprepared. I think my parents came to crew me from Indiana, and they must have brought like a 70-liter igloo cooler at every aid station
That's
with
great.
every sandwich known to man. I took the early start. I was really nervous about being able to finish in time, so I could be 14 instead of 12 hours. So I had to start in the dark. I was overdressed because it was cold at the start. And I remember I was in tights and like a Patagonia cold weather quarter zip. And it was 70 some degrees at the
Oh my
finish.
gosh.
But I wouldn't take it off. I couldn't change. It's what I trained with. So a lot of rookie things going on. But, and I couldn't get over like, why is my bib so big? I didn't understand the bib folding. It just like pulled me for the longest time on the towpath. But I had such a good time. I had a friend who came out and ran some miles with me. And it was really my first introduction to that community. Like, look at all these people. Like, it's not like a half marathon. They're all like cheering me on. And these aid stations are amazing. And look at what I get to eat. And it's so beautiful. I was an unhappy camper for the last 8 miles. Those last rolling miles when you're just ready to be done. But I finished in like, I don't know, 11 and change and wasn't done. You know, I didn't think, oh, I will never do that again. Just thought, what's next? So.
Well, and what's next is like I looked at your ultra sign up and like you have like I wrote it down here actually, six races in your like first year of ultra running from that to the next year, including the Vermont 100 miler like 8 months later. So
That escalated
I
quickly.
was gonna say, so that escalated quickly. Was that all like Sue, or was were you just like right away just so in love with it and wanted to do as much as you could?
I think it was a combination of the two. I think I was definitely in love with it, and Sue was such a good guide, like, you know, showing me what was possible, showing me how she trained. And you know, I was in my late 20s. It was like you're in the prime of your life. It's easy to put the miles down. Recovery is like instantaneous. So, you know, what a fun time to explore what's possible. I was really hooked. And she was an amazing mentor. I had lots of great friends supporting me. And it was fun, like every week, you know, every month or whatever, to go out and see something new, see a new park, a new trail, places I hadn't been before. So it was a way to explore as well.
Well, I think doing that when you're young, like I can see that many of us started ultra running, later, 30s and 40s and such, but you've done something that I think many people struggle to do, which is c run and train consistently over 2 decades now. And I think a lot of people have some, kind of genetic tendency to that. I do believe that. I feel like I kind of have a sturdy body, and I just bluntly put that on, I don't know, some of me was born that way. But I also think there's always an intentional part as well of probably some stuff that you do or pay attention to that keeps you consistent and keeps you injury free. So can you think of any things that have that you're in charge of besides your parents, that have helped you keep at it for 20 plus years?
I never train with a watch. I don't race with a watch. I don't run with a watch. I don't keep track of my miles. Like I train on vibes, basically.
So many people's minds just blew, and they're just gonna shut this off right now. They're like, I
I'm
can't, no, can't do that.
it was when I started, I was rigid. I would adhere to whatever training plan you gave me to a T. I know that that's the kind of person I am. So if you give me technology, if you give me something that's giving me instantaneous feedback, then I'm always going to act on that, whether or not it's like the best thing for me, if that makes sense. Like if the watch says I'm running a 10:15 pace and I think I should be sub 10, even if I feel like crap, I'm going to do what the watch tells me to do. So I have to just say goodbye to all that stuff. And Those training plans are really important as I got going. And I think what I learned from being a swimmer all those years is that you've just got to keep that aerobic base.
Yeah.
So I don't necessarily race all the time. I don't run long all the time, but I run enough so that it's always within reach.
Yeah.
Kind of know where that line is. I run almost every afternoon with my husband, and those are really casual, fun runs where we just kind of catch up on our work day. And whenever I'm out running by myself, part of the joy of, I set a course and I'll run the miles I need to, but without a watch and not thinking about my pace, I really tune into like the effort level that I know I need to be at,
Sure.
monitoring my own effort level. And it gives me the ability to just like stop and appreciate whatever I happen to see. Like, I want to
Yeah.
stop and appreciate the fox kits that are playing in the middle of the road, or the big buck that's over there, stop and eat a pawpaw, whatever it is.
Yeah.
That keeps the joy alive.
Yeah.
So,
I love
it's
it.
important.
That's like super powerful stuff. I subscribe. I wear a watch, but I also just feel that, yeah, you can't be so rigid and being able, just giving yourself the freedom, especially when you're by yourself, to just go easy and, appreciate the run and know, what you're doing before you start. But a lot of that should entail, yeah, today I'm doing this for this aerobic pace, and that means I have room for stopping and watching or hiking hills or just standing and looking at a view for a few minutes or so. And again, secrets to longevity, man. They're out there for a lot of people, but they're easy to pass by.
Yeah, that joy is a big part of it,
Yeah.
for sure. And I know, like, I don't want people to think I'm being flip, because you do have to prepare for
Yeah,
a race
totally.
like masochist. And there are certain workouts that I'll do, and certain times when I'll go out and I'll run up and down the mountain X number of times,
Yeah.
because I know that's going to get me fit enough. But day
Yeah.
to day, it's not adherence to a rigid schedule or rigid pace.
Yeah, love it. Well, let's go forward a couple of years then from your first JFK. So your first Mount Masochist, I believe, was November 2005.
Yep, because
And
I DNF'd in 2004.
okay, yeah. And well, maybe start there. So 2004 was your first one. That I think I just missed that on the ultra sign up, or maybe I didn't
I've
cue that
outed
in.
myself.
So that was your first, and yeah, what happened? Because okay, you had this huge year, of course, where you ran all these, and you ran Vermont 100 miler. How did you go into 2004 first masochist, and why masochist? I mean, obviously, you probably heard about it back then, but was that something that, Sue was saying we got to do this, or was there something that,
Sue had
got
done
you
it,
there?
and it was another like new race to try, so I
Yeah.
was willing to do that. And if I'm honest, and I think about like those first races I ran, I did a 100 miler. It was Vermont. It's hilly for sure. But training where I was in Pennsylvania and running things like the Hat Race and Bull Run, like
Yeah.
those aren't the Blue Ridge Mountains.
Yeah,
And I
right.
was woefully unprepared for actual mountains. Now, anyone from the West Coast is going to laugh at me when I say actual mountains, but to me, in that first year of ultra running, those were the biggest climbs that I've ever seen, and I was definitely unprepared. So I made it to the loop, and I made it into the loop. That was when you still went from the James River Center on the Blue Ridge Parkway,
Yeah.
point to point. And I made it into the loop. And when I came out of the loop, I was pretty close to hypothermic. I'd slowed down so much. Again, I was not prepared for the fact that it was going to be colder, 2,000 feet higher,
Yeah.
and missed the cutoff. Got a ride back down. With who was in the car? Jim O'Neill. He was a long time awesome ultra runner. So I had some good company. He kind of helped talk me down off the ledge.
Yeah.
Gonna be okay. So
Yeah.
there
Yeah.
were some tears, I think. I probably also hadn't consumed enough calories, that sort of thing.
I'm
And
sure. And when you feel bad, like the loop, it's the, epic part of that race, but that second half of it, like, 'cause now you do the Mount Pleasant out and back, but I kind of think of that as a divider, but that second part to me is just really cruel and brutal. And if your legs hurt or you're tired, I just feel like you should be going downhill, but you still go uphill.
There's still so many uphills.
Yeah, and then there's really steep downhills that just are brutal on your legs. So by the time you get to that aid station, it's a mental thing to kind of be there okay. So obviously, your body was not okay at that year.
It was inexperience as
Yeah.
well. But yeah. So,
And then you said, when were you like, I'm coming back?
oh, that day, because
Yeah.
I had to get driven back to the finish line, and then I had to wait and watch everyone finish
Oh
so I
man.
could get on a bus and then be shuttled back to
That's
Lynchburg.
right. Yep, the
So,
bus.
it was like all these people doing this amazing thing and so happy. I hadn't had that experience yet of just being at the finish of a race and seeing what it looks like as a spectator. And I was like, oh, so sad I missed that. And Sue finished, she was in great shape. A guy from my high school finished that year. We ended up chatting afterwards from Indiana was out there. So it just made me want to come back.
Yeah. What if like everybody's first ultra, you just had to sit at the finish line the whole way. Like that's actually really formative, I think. And especially having DNF'd and then seeing everybody who's finishing and people that you were probably way ahead of as well, I think that's a really powerful thing. I've been on that side of it as well.
Yeah,
And
it really sticks in your mind. Like
yeah.
you missed out on that celebration. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, the next year you came back and finished. There was like 198 finishers that year. I thought it was cool. There was 41 women, which is like the same ratio as last year. So even back, then there was like a pretty strong showing there. There was, Ann Riddle and like Jen Shelton, and it was like the Dave
Oh, this,
Mackey era as
yeah.
well.
Oh, the
So
OG.
that first finish must have been sweet there. I mean, you had already done some amazing things, but having had sat at the country store the year before, finally getting to be one of these people who ran in from the road must have been a pretty awesome feeling.
Yeah, it definitely made it sweeter. And my impression from that first try was how hard it was. Like, this is
Yeah.
harder. It felt harder to me than Vermont. Whether or not that was accurate, that's just the way it felt. And to go back the next year and finish and have a little time to spare, like, felt really good. Like, okay, here's another challenge. Like, I thought, you do 100 miles, you can do whatever.
Yeah.
And that's not true.
Yeah,
So,
for
yeah.
sure. So,
So it was definitely sweeter.
well, and then you've had 20 years there, which again, like, gosh, I can't fathom. That's just a lot of time on the course and with people, and again, a lot of stuff has changed. You go back to the point to point and the buses, and now
Oh, the
it's
buses.
logistically so easy, Are there any special years that really stand out to you? Any races that for whatever reason were just like, oh, that was great, or this was horrible?
I think it was 2008. So, this is when Horton was in charge, and he's all about the competition
Yeah.
and puffy jackets, puffy
Yeah.
jacket, puffy jacket,
Yes.
right? So in 2000, I think it was eight. I was probably running the best that I ever have. And it was the year that Clark took over and I was fifth. It was a really hot year. And so that was like a year when I ran Badwater, like heat was my thing, 75, almost 80
Oh
degrees
man.
on race day.
Yeah.
And that just like were the conditions that set me free,
Yeah.
kind of humbled everyone else and I was in my element. And managed to finish fifth, but Clark didn't hand out puffy jackets.
Ugh.
I got a quarter zip that I still have. It's a small, still doesn't fit, but it's still in my drawer. But that year, I remember the heat on the course and thinking, I'm good. I'm good. I'm really good. So that was kind of fun, like to have that little tactical advantage. Because most of the time, I'm not really thinking about my place, just am I pushing as hard as I can in the moment? Like that's the question I'm always asking. This last year was really great being with Sophie for so long. Like we had like this really raw conversation and there were tears shed, but really one of those conversations that you don't get to have in any other place in your life. So that was really special.
That's awesome.
There was the year we ran right after Mike Broderick died.
I know she
And so it
talks
was
about him
hard
a
to
lot.
finish, but it was really kind of the best thing to do. The best way to celebrate him. So, excuse me. And then there were some years where there was snow, the snow in the loop that is always memorable. And running it with Jim the year that he did the Beast series was really fun. We had our friend Rick crew us because it was, I think, still point to point. And yeah, we were starting at the KOA at that point. We ran from the KOA to Montebello, and he was our crew. He ended up marrying us. So it was that was a really special time. So, and you know, to be with someone where you can spend 11 hours on the trail running together, that's pretty great.
Well, these stories you're just plucking out that are clearly like deep are just, a few examples of the community that you do get from just doing races, being in this community. And, it's running, but for us who do it and the type of people that we meet and bond with, boy, that becomes so powerful to be able to have a moment like that with Sophie in a race, because that's accumulation of, a decade plus of, knowing each other and knowing all the people, and you and Jim. So that's awesome.
Yeah, it's you know, I think that's what keeps you coming back. Like if there were ever a point where I couldn't run, I would come back and volunteer just because the people are the best. You
Are
know,
there
it's
any
pretty fun.
special parts of the course, any little sacred places that when you're running by, you just have a good feeling about, or something that you just really love right here?
Oh, I love climbing, is it Buck Mountain? What is it called? Mountain. I love,
After 60.
yeah, I love that climb. And I know if I feel good on that climb, I'm gonna have a good day. Like that's where I might turn on my music. That's where I really get to test my legs, kind of, you know, you are a little bit into the pain cave. It's time to see what you can really do. Can I keep doing the work? So I love that moment. I love getting out of the loop. When I get out of the loop, I know I'm not home free, but kind of. I'm pretty sure things are going to be okay from then on out. And that there's a certain place up on the ridge before you start descending where they used to have the aid station. So there used to be an aid station, like,
Porter's Ridge. Where you just pass the AT and right as you enter like the Jeep Trail.
Like that moment. It used to be marked by the aid station, but I can still like have that feeling when I get there, like, okay, that's my last checkpoint.
I always envision an invisible table of like Mountain Dew there that, and some person that doesn't run sitting there like, yep,
Whatever,
for some miles to
weirdo.
go. That's great. That's great. I bet there's a lot of people who don't love the Buck Mountain climb, but that speaks a lot about you, I think. And I agree too, that is, it's such an important part of the race.
Yeah, it's a, I've always enjoyed it. And I guess that's mindset too. Like, you know, I'm not going to do it. So much of that is your approach, whatever you're able to wrap your mind around. And I constantly remind myself to just run with an attitude of gratitude because it's you know, in a lot of ways, just kind of a silly sport. And I don't say that to diminish anything that anyone's doing, but just like, we're running crazy distances in the woods for giggles, and it's great. You know,
Yeah,
we don't have to take it that seriously. And look at all these people who are out here just to help you accomplish your goal. Like, what an amazing thing. So
totally.
always try to approach it just being very thankful, and that
Yeah.
keeps me in the right headspace too.
Well, how has your, and maybe this is, you know, that's probably part of this, how has your relationship with this race changed? Oh, you know, since you were like 29 or so, because you're 50, 51 right now.
We'll be 51 for this version of the race.
Okay. All right.
I don't know. It's almost like I revere it a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, it's this chance to figure out what I'm made of every year. Am I
Yeah.
still strong enough? And I like asking those questions. I love the fall, like going to the Blue Ridge Mountains in the fall. You know, I'm not a particularly religious person, but I think that mountain masochist now allows me to experience what people would call grace. And so I love it for that. It's
Yeah.
not just competition, it's really more exploration, appreciation, almost like a prayer.
Yeah. Amen. Is there a masochist friend who you can think of you've maybe really built a relationship with kind of mostly at that race, like over 20 years?
Big Mike Dunlop.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
He's probably the tallest man out there. I'm probably the tallest woman out there, and we run very similar paces. So we've probably spent the first, I don't know, 6 to 8 miles of that race together. You know, probably close to 10 times. And it's just really nice getting to make a friend like that. You
Yeah.
know, it just starts with kind of that recognition, like, hey, you, I've seen you before, and
Love
then you're
it.
having the same pace.
Yep.
Getting to know him has been a real treat. And you know, the miles with Sophie, she's always such a competitor. I love her fire. So getting to spend any time with her on that course is great. Rebecca Tritipo, I think maybe she has 20 finishes. Spending time with her, she still may not know who I am, but she was always such a an icon to me.
Yeah.
That those years that I was able to run with her for even a little bit were pretty amazing. Pick her brain,
Yeah.
get to
It
know
was
her.
so much info when I was trying to go through and say like, who has run this many times as you? And I should have looked more into Rebecca 'cause she's amazing and she's been doing it for so long, but Chat GPT was not helping me out, man. I had to do it manually, so
Oh, that's rough.
I said, "Hey, you know, someone with 19 going on 20 is pretty amazing." So,
Oh, well, thanks.
yeah,
That's been a lot of fun.
yeah. So I
I
have
found
a
this.
few more questions.
I found an artifact.
Let's see what that is. Yes, look at that. So the 2008 Iron Horse Trophy. Now that is the bench press after the race.
Yes.
Amazing.
I think
Did you win that any other years?
that was the only year I felt good enough to compete.
That's
Usually
great.
I'm spent. But I gotta get, I think, aren't the Tim and Brenton, Jordan, aren't they all bringing that back?
Yeah.
Kudos to them. Like, I love what they're doing with the new race format, getting more people out there. It's fabulous.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I've always been, I've actually been accused by some friends of like, are you on like the payroll or something? I'm like, no, I just love it. I think the year that COVID was there, you know, right? A bunch of us went
Oh
out
yeah, you're
and ran, and that
yep.
was fun. And but just I think they've got it on really good footing now. And well, that was a question I had for you too. What do you think of the new course? Because you know, the old course was great having it as a point to point, but I'm a very practical person, and I have to say, like, the logistics were a nightmare. You know, you would go down to Lynchburg, you would definitely stay the night down there, and then you'd have to figure out a way, you know, from Lynchburg to the start was, I don't know, an hour. And if you're on the bus, you got these fumes before the race. And then you finish, and like either you drive all the way back down to Lynchburg or you take the bus. And man, and then you got to go home after that. So that was a real crazy long, long, long day on top of the ultra running. But then I also loved the dinner and the banquet and things like that. So I think they're doing a good job with the firehouse and everything like that. What are your thoughts on the current MMTR? I'm going to say that the past couple years.
Oh man, I think the way they've injected the new excitement and life into it is great.
Yeah.
Like you've got to change. And I understand, I mean, I've been a race director on a very small scale. And even that logistically, permit wise, is a nightmare. You
Yeah.
know, it's a lot to handle. And I can't imagine what it was like to organize those buses
Yeah.
and get all those people where they needed to be and check-ins and check-outs. Like, you know, as an RD, all those points where you could lose someone or not keep track of them, have to get them places, that seems like logistically kind of crazy. I did love running point to point. Like it was cool to actually make progress because I live north. So we were running from the
Yeah.
south to the north. So as long as you had a crew with you, like that was fabulous because you just finished. And, you know, whether I suckered Jim or our friend Rick into being crew and then just driving us home from
Yeah.
Montebello,
Yeah.
that was great. But there were years when I rode the bus and either I was nauseous and throwing up, or the guy next to me was nauseous and
Yeah.
throwing up. And it's just like just kind of white knuckling going up and over the mountain on
Yeah.
those roads in a school bus. I don't have to relive that.
Nope,
So
it is not a straight road from Montebello to anywhere. And certainly if you're on a bus, that's not what you want to be doing after running 50 miles. So
You've destroyed your stomach and everything else.
yeah.
You know, I missed that fast start though on the Blue Ridge Parkway. I mean, you could just really cruise, spread out, you know, run down across the river. That was always beautiful because the sun had just come up.
Yeah.
Didn't really need a headlamp or any lights because you're just
Yeah.
running the roads. That was an advantage. But when I think about those years in the race versus how the race is in out and back now, other than the opening road portion, like I don't remember really those other miles until we got to the reservoir.
Yeah.
And now you're doing that on the out and back
Yeah.
anyway.
Yeah.
So for me, I love that, you know, Tim, Brenton, those guys have taken it over and they're making more of it. They're making it more accessible. They're making it, you know, with the 50K, they're making it more challenging with the 100K. Like you're going to get so many more people involved and you're still going to see all those classic kind of pieces, I think, of the course. And you're still going to experience the Blue Ridge like the most perfect time in the fall. So.
Yeah, I'm actually signed up for the 50K, which, you know, as a masochist purist, part of me is like, I hate to do that, but I really want to focus on a good Hellgate this year, and I, you know, I realize that I just want to like take it back a notch in November, and but I'm really excited because the course is great and super hard. You know, there's a lot of vert and climbing, and then you
Fun
know
trail
getting.
there.
Yeah, getting to run down or up, a lot of the stuff you're doing the opposite is pretty good. And we still get to hang out in the field across from the store after the race, which when we have those nice weather afternoons, you just can't beat that.
Yeah, there's no better place to be for
Yeah,
sure.
yeah.
We'll have to do a Hellgate podcast because that's kind of like your obsession, your race.
Yeah, it kind of is, you know, and at the same time, it's like I'll be going from my 13th finish, so I'm still humble as to, I feel like a new kid as well, you know, compared to people who've been doing this for much longer. So, and well, and on that note too, I mean, tell me your thoughts about, you've done a lot of races. I mean, you have a ton of Promised Land finishes. You have a ton of Bull Run finishes. Obviously, like the local stuff has, you know, it's logistically easy, but it's also, you know, special, and I think connects you more to the community. So, what are your thoughts on doing the same race over and over for so long. Not in an obsessive way, but just the continuous participation and still coming back because clearly you want to do it.
Yeah. A big part of that was just the Virginia Happy Trails Running Club. I didn't start off as a part of that club. Like, I had been running for a couple of years before I really got connected. And so anything they're doing is like fun to be a part of. You know, that's a great crew. I think I'm wearing, I know this is a totally auditory medium for your listeners.
Yes.
If it were visual, I'm wearing my shirt from 2007, so oldest one I could find. And Keith Nippling of the VHGRC took this picture. So that crew, always fun. So
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
that's probably why I went back to Bull Run so many times.
Yeah.
Like, just knowing, I don't particularly love Bull Run. I will not talk about it with the same glow in my eyes as I do when I talk about
Yeah.
masochists. But the people were fun. Promised Land. Now, you know, if masochist is Virginia perfection in the fall, then Promised Land is Virginia perfection in the spring.
Yes, it is.
Those are
Yeah.
just kind of bookends.
Yep.
And, you know, just when I started out, you know, the first couple of years I was married, but then I was divorced and I didn't have a ton of money. So travel was not always on the table and it had to be pretty special. The Mid-Atlantic is just amazing that there are these fabulous races that are an hour, a couple hours away, easy to access, fun to run, great community. And I don't know, maybe it's a rut, but it doesn't feel like it. I don't feel sad. I don't feel
Yeah.
like I'm just doing the same old. I feel excited, and invigorated when I go to run those races again because I love the terrain, I love the people.
Yeah. Yeah, it's easy to come back. We
Yeah.
do this like 50K training group through our local Cats Charlottesville group, and but I kind of make it a point to tell, newer people every year that like I want you to appreciate just how wonderful we have it here in Virginia. It's really unusually special that we have the mountains and terrain that we do, but we have the races and the community and these courses that we do with all these groups and people who have been doing these things for a while. It's not in every state, that is for sure. Even places that are great and have bigger mountains and stuff, having all of that is a pretty unique Virginia thing. And maybe because our state is also not the biggest, there's so much overlap, and we're all only a few hours away from each other, so it makes it easy to go to something up in the North Massanuttons versus over in Montebello versus something somewhere else. So it's a real it's I'm grateful to that all the time.
Well, I think we owe a lot to Horton and the VHTRC,
Yeah.
like kind of foundational people and groups that did so much to like grow the sport, and they're so close. And I think about the VHGRC founders and whatever vision they had, like the way they made that come to life. You know, if you're a VHGRC member, you could run an ultra, I think, a month for
Yeah.
free. So I
Yeah.
just, yeah. And
And
they've
then
kept it
again,
going.
you get the family that comes with that too, which you can have as much or as little as
Most
you
of them are
want.
pretty great.
Okay, two more questions, and then we're wrapping up.
Okay.
Okay, you're just about to turn 51 before this race. How is your relationship with running different now than it was when you were 30?
Oh, I'm much kinder on myself, I think. I still want to push, but there was a lot of rigidity and can I run a 100-mile week? And I have to do that if I'm going to run a 100-mile race. And now I'm at the point where my feet are trash. So I'll probably never run another 100-mile race. And I'm okay with that. I don't have FOMO, I guess, anymore about that. I can read race reports and not think, oh, I better go do that. I have to do
Yeah.
that. I can appreciate it for someone else and then just kind of focus on my own thing.
That's great.
Whereas in my 30s, I probably couldn't do that. If I heard about something new, well, could I do that? I gotta go try that. That's probably the biggest difference is just being able to let go of that comparison is the thief of joy. I'm not really
Yeah.
comparing anymore. I've stopped comparing myself to who I was when I was younger. I know that I'm not going to be the same now, and that takes some getting used to when you get older. But there's still things that I can do, and I can still push myself and see what I'm capable of now, and I'm gonna keep doing that.
Yeah, that's a great maturing in the sport where it can become more special, even though we're getting slower. And but that type of trade-off is very much worth it. I'm turning 50 in February, so I'm up against all those same things, and it's in many ways I love it more than I did, 13 years ago.
Yeah, I think there's something like almost deeper there. Like
Yeah.
you've really grown a relationship with the sport and the people. And it's not so much about maybe about self as it is about the community and also just about getting to know yourself better in each of these stages of life. One way to do that.
Yeah, and if you've survived this long, you kind of have to be kind to yourself, but also tough on yourself. Like those two at the same time, which maybe not everybody can handle. Those are competing things, but they can actually go together really well.
That's a good perspective. Very
Yeah.
true.
Okay, 2026. Are we gonna see you, or is this it, or who knows? Ask you next year.
TBD.
Yeah, TBD.
I can't imagine not being there, but I've been really Jim is the ultimate supportive partner. I can't say enough about that, but it almost feels, kind of selfish. Like he's just out there every November, first Saturday in November, every year, driving around, feeding me whatever I want, tolerating whatever I ask for. So maybe it's his turn. Maybe, I need to give back. I'd like to volunteer more, but I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, we will see.
I'm gonna keep the all doors open.
Yeah, well, I love it. Well, again, this has been a great, great, great use of my past hour, and I feel much richer after talking with you. And I cannot wait to see you because I will be there, and I hope we all start at the same time, and we'll be in the cabins, and we're gonna spend these beautiful days of late September and October just stopping and checking out the fox kits and looking at the moon and all those things, as we're also tough to ourselves as well, getting ready for the big race. So I
Yeah,
look forward to
enjoy
seeing
every
you there.
minute. It's a
Yeah,
gift,
it
right?
is. It is.
So,
So,
yeah.
well, again, Alyssa Springman, Alisa, gosh, see, there's too many Alyssas in my
I
life.
know.
I know I was going to
It's
miss up
close
one,
enough. I answer to it. You're good.
but
I think that's still what David calls me, David Hoyer. Right.
probably that sounds like something he might do. Well,
Attractive.
again, pleasure. Thank you so
Oh, thank you,
much. Good
John.
info there, and I can't wait to see you at the Damascus.
Oh, thanks so much. Great talking to you.
Bye-bye. Good
All
night.
right. See you soon. Bye.
Bernstein, Lee and Matt, Brass, Nap, Lenny, Bruce and Lester Banks, birthday party, cheesecake, jelly bean, boom, symbiotic, patriotic, slam, button, nap, right? It's the end of the world as we know it, and I feel fine.